I'd like to change subjects on you for just a moment. You're also involved with the National Center for Disaster Preparedness, and I want to ask you about swine flu. Can we realistically produce enough vaccine to combat H1N1?
There's been a great deal of talk, obviously, and concern about this, what's now being called the novel or new H1N1 virus, or what people were originally calling the swine flu virus, that originated in Mexico a couple of months ago and has now been spreading rapidly around the world to the point where it's spread so much that it's called an actual pandemic by the World Health Organization. And there's a lot of things that are being done and could be done to slow the spread, but right now it's a very mild illness in terms of the potential fatalities that come from it. That said, we obviously will be needing a vaccine, and the vaccine is being developed as we speak. What our concern is on a large scale is if that we had to vaccinate many people in a hurry, if the, let's say the virus comes back in a more severe form in the fall and winter of this year, we'll really want to be vaccinating people. But at the maximum capacity, we could not even produce 1 billion doses of vaccine, which seems like a huge number, but there's 6.8 billion people in the world. So if all we get is 900 million doses, there's going to be a substantial gap between those that will be able to get the vaccine and those that won't, and that's a big concern. Secondly, if we put all of our vaccine manufacturing plants on the task of producing a maximum amount of H1N1 vaccine, that will have the potential of impairing our ability to produce usual annual influenza vaccine that we still need every year. And don't forget that seasonal influenza, which comes around every year, kills about 36,000 Americans every year, as well as 250,000 people worldwide. So we might be caught between this public health rock and hard place where we need to both work on the seasonal flu but the new pandemic as well.
You mentioned that there's no way we will be able to produce enough doses. How will we determine who will get the vaccine and how many at risk who will not get the vaccine? Is it has versus the have-nots?
Well, one of the most difficult ethical questions we're going to have is how to distribute a limited amount of vaccine to a very large population around the world who needs it. And I don't think we have the answers yet, frankly, to that question. What we are most concerned about is that the nations with limited economic resources, the developing nations, for example, will have far less opportunity to buy or produce the vaccine, so that we'll have a situation where the so-called haves of the world, the developed nations, may have more than their fair share of the vaccine, and the have-not or the poor countries be really suffering because they simply can't get their hands on enough material to vaccinate all of their citizens. That will have significant political and economic repercussions, however.
You know, when I think about disaster preparedness, certainly the H1N1 falls under that category, but I was in New York City for 9/11, and that we came to the realization of the potential for other acts of terrorism that could certainly tax our American hospitals. Just how well equipped are our hospitals today to respond to a pandemic or an act of terrorism?
This is a fascinating question that we have been wrestling. You know, my center is the National Center for Disaster Preparedness at what's called the Columbia University Mailman School of Public Health. So we actually have been focusing a lot of our energy on trying to analyze the state of readiness of the nation's hospitals to respond to a pandemic or a nuclear terrorism or even another Katrina-like hurricane. And what we and others have consistently found is that while we're making advances on the public health side, in other words, the ability to track things like pandemics and to follow disease patterns to produce vaccine, we're getting better at that. But what's not improved very much is the capacity of the nation's hospitals and healthcare systems to respond or to surge up to increase capacity if a major event happened. That problem has been something that we've been working on hard, but if we don't fix it, we may come to regret the fact that we haven't invested enough in improving hospital readiness prior to the next big event, which inevitably will happen.
Is it a matter of needing more hospitals and more people entering the healthcare profession, or is it simply a matter of trying to ramp up those facilities that we do have?
The health professional workforce issue is a big challenge, and we do have to ramp that up, and we have to get more people into primary care and that sort of thing. Right now, we have lots of doctors, but poorly distributed, so some communities have lots of doctors, others have none. So there's some other areas in the background. But what we need is the capacity that if something big were to happen in Chicago or L.A. or the whole country next month, that the system can't expand enough to take care of the numbers of victims and people needing medical care that we might imagine. Now, there's not that many scenarios where large numbers of people would get sick or injured in a short period of time. But, you know, you can think of a big earthquake on the West Coast, another Katrina-type situation in the Southeast, nuclear terrorism, and I mean actually a nuclear bomb, not just a dirty weapon, in New York or Washington, D.C. or Los Angeles. And when you start thinking about these large, what I call mega events, is or mega disasters, we remain concerned that the system doesn't have enough depth to really be able to respond in a large-scale way when we need it.